Good evening. This would ordinarily be the place to say the president of the United States doubled down or tripled down today on his remarks of the weekend, tweeting that four non-white congresswomen should go back to their home countries. Never mind that three of the four are native-born Americans. It would also be the place to play you their reaction to discuss how many Republicans condemned or failed to condemn the remarks, followed by questions about where this all fits into the president's strategy for appealing to the base. And yeah, we will get to all of that tonight, including what the four congresswomen had to say. But as interesting as any or all of those items might be, they're also the things we talk about so we don't have to bring up something else. Namely, that what drives the president to say what he says is not just about politics, as some have suggested. It's not just about winning votes or winning arguments or repeating whatever he just saw on Fox News. It's not three-dimensional chess. It's really something much simpler. So simple and frankly so ugly that it is tempting to just take it as a given and then move on, to file it away as merely Trump being Trump, when that is really the whole point, Trump being Trump. What comes out of his mouth is a reflection of who he is and who he's been for as long as he's been a public figure. This, for example, is who he is.
We're building a wall. He's a Mexican. We're building a wall between here and Mexico.
That was the president 2 years ago, saying that an American-born judge, an American, has dual loyalties and cannot be fair because of his Mexican heritage. Then House Speaker Paul Ryan called that, quote, the textbook definition of a racist comment. Another word that fits the president maybe far better than his oddly long ties and expensive yet ill-fitting suits is demagogue. President Trump has shown yet again he is a demagogue. In case you're unfamiliar with the word, I'm quoting Webster's Dictionary. A demagogue is a leader who makes use of popular prejudices and false claims and promises in order to gain power. So with that in mind, here's what the president tweeted yesterday. So interesting to see progressive Democrat congresswomen who originally came from countries whose governments are a complete and total catastrophe, the worst, most corrupt and inept anywhere in the world, if they even have a functioning government at all, now loudly and viciously telling the people of the United States, the greatest and most powerful nation on earth, how our government is to be run. Why don't they go back and help fix the totally broken and crime-infested places from which they came? Now, in point of fact, the countries, in quotes, that Congresswomen Ayanna Pressley and Rashida Tlaib and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez are from, that country is the United States of America. Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, a naturalized American citizen, is from Somalia and has lived here since she was a teenager. But a demagogue doesn't care about facts. The president labels them foreigners. The fact that they're all women and women of color only adds to his eagerness to label them as something other than American. Now, if you believe the president's own words, these four congresswomen look like the other. Now, sometimes that other is the terrifying unknown other, as he described when he first launched his campaign.
When Mexico sends its people, they're not sending their best. They're not sending you. They're not sending you. They're sending people that have lots of problems, and they're bringing those problems with us. They're bringing drugs. They're bringing crime. They're rapists.
So the message there, people looking for asylum, people looking to come to this country, they're not like you or me. They're other. He added that he also assumed there were some good people, but the focus was clearly on the threat, on the other, which the president often describes as being in our midst, or which he describes using words like invasion or infestation, the latter of which was often used to describe Jews in pre-war Germany as the so-called enemy within, hiding in plain sight. And even at the time the president was saying those things, it wasn't especially new. And that's because the president, you'll recall, though it now seems like decades ago, the president also smeared the first African-American president as the other.
I would like to have him show his birth certificate. And can I be honest with you? I hope he can. Because if he can't, and if he wasn't born in this country, which is a real possibility, I'm not saying it happened, I'm saying it's a real possibility, much greater than I thought 2 or 3 weeks ago, then he has pulled one of the great cons in the history of politics.
I mean, in other words, it's very possible, he's saying there, that the 44th president of the United States was a con man, which in addition to being textbook projection for Donald Trump to be calling somebody else a con man, gets us to the textbook definition of racism. And I'm quoting again from Webster's, a belief that race is the primary determinant of human traits and capacities and that racial differences produce an inherent superiority of a particular race. Norway, after all, isn't sending us rapists, according to the president. Mexico is. And Kenya may have sent a little baby con artist. And African Americans, according to a former Trump senior executive, can't be trusted around money in the president's eyes. Barbara Rez, who has been on this program many times, telling The Atlantic, quote, Trump talked about how he didn't want black people handling his money. He wanted the guys with yarmulkes. He was very much the kind of person who would take people of a religion like Jews or a race like blacks or a nationality like Italians and ascribe to them certain qualities. Blacks were lazy and Jews were good with money and Italians were good with their hands and Germans were clean. Now, again, the textbook definition of racism is a belief that race is the primary determinant of human traits and capacities. And again, this belief seems to extend both forward and back throughout the president's public life. His first appearance on the national stage was when the federal government sued the Trump family company for large-scale housing discrimination against people of color. He famously doubted and still doubts the innocence of the Central Park Five, all non-white despite DNA evidence and a confession from someone else. By the same token, and no pun intended, he could not bring himself to single out and condemn neo-Nazis and white supremacists in Charlottesville. And even on more benign matters, the president seems to attach group characteristics to individuals, such as a stereotype, a mistaken one, that all African-Americans are from the inner city, or, laughable as it sounds, that they all somehow know one another. Here he is taking a question from April Ryan, who is African-American.
Mm-hmm. Are you going to include the Congressional Black Caucus and the Congressional
Well,
Hispanic
I would.
Caucus,
I tell you what. Do you want to set up the meeting? Do you want to set up the meeting?
No.
Are they friends of yours?
I'm just a reporter.
Set up the meeting.
I know some of them, but I'm sure
Let's
they're
go. Set up
right
a meeting.
Now, again, none of this is new. He's been saying things like this literally for decades. They define who he is. It brings to mind another page from Webster's, the one on the word bigot. A person who is obstinately or intolerantly devoted to his or her own opinions and prejudices. So, yes, to use the Washington phrase, the president today doubled down on his racist attack on the four congresswomen because, in a non-Washington phrase, that is just who he is.
If you're not happy here, then you can leave. As far as I'm concerned, if you hate our country, if you're not happy here, you can leave. And that's what I say all the time. That's what I said in a tweet, which I guess some people think is controversial. A lot of people love it, by the way. A lot of people love it. But if you're not happy in the U.S., if you're complaining all the time, very simply, you can leave. You can leave right now. Come back if you want. Don't come back. It's okay, too. But if you're not happy, you can leave.
Joining us now is Khizr Khan, a proud American citizen who emigrated from Pakistan. He's the Gold Star father of a brave fallen American soldier, Army Captain Humayun Khan, who was killed in the Iraq War in 2004. And of course, many will remember Mr. Khan spoke at the 2016 Democratic National Convention against then candidate Trump's rhetoric. Soon after, Mr. Trump not only criticized Mr. Khan, but also suggested his wife wasn't allowed to speak at the convention because of their Muslim faith. Mr. Khan joins me tonight from Charlottesville, Virginia. Mr. Khan, you've been obviously the target of personal attacks from this president. I'm wondering what your reaction to these latest comments from him and him essentially doubling down on them today.
Anderson, thank you. To Donald Trump, I say, sir, have you no sense of decency? When is this going to end, this demagoguery, this racism, this provoking hate and division for political expediency purpose? Donald Trump is at it again, as he was in 2016. He has nothing to offer. Therefore, he is going to create division and hate for political expediency purpose. I am saddened but not surprised because, as you explained his background, he is a demagogue and he will continue to use hate and division for his political expediency purpose.
I mean, I find it awkward to even say this, but just on a factual basis, this is a man without any shame. I mean, he doesn't have a healthcare policy. He's unable to make progress on immigration and any sort of policy that actually solves the problem long term. And so he does these things And it is largely in times to distract, but it's not just distracting people. It's distracting people in the worst possible bigoted, divisive way. It's distracting people by turning us all against each other and viewing each other as other.
Well, he sits in people's house as leader of this blessed nation, yet he has nothing to offer. He promised immigration reform, healthcare reform, and other claims he has made. He has made no progress because of his lack of leadership. Yet he continues to sow hate. This is a page from Putin's playbook. Our adversaries are very happy to see him act as enemy of the United States. He is acting as adversary of the United States. This is our blessed country. This is our blessed nation. This president who has taken the oath to defend the Constitution of the United States is assaulting, is attacking honorable member of the Congress, the members of the House of Representatives, institution of Article 1. He's supposed to defend and protect all of us, yet he continues to defend, continues to attack and assault these honorable members of our Congress and the minorities.
It's also, it's the most obvious sort of bumper sticker kind of slogan of like America, love it or leave it, that, you know, sort of Archie Bunker used to use, and that it has almost become a joke because it is so simplified and you know, essentially un-American to say that you disagree with me, that you are un-American. You disagree with me, you should leave the country, as opposed to this is a land which welcomes debate and free expression.
This is the proof of an authoritarian mentality, undemocratic mentality. Fortunately, America has discovered him. America has realized the mistake they made in 2016, that they will, and next time, they are very much cognizant of the harm that he continues to cause to our democratic institutions, our democracy, our decency. This blessed nation is the same nation that instituted, that started after the Second World War, when the world was totally destructed, started the Marshall Plan to construct the world. That is how the world sees us, continues to see us, view us as beacon of hope and prosperity. And this president is contrary to that being beacon of hope. He will continue. It will get worse as he realizes his failures. As the election gets near, he will continue to get worse, his hate speech, his sowing division, because he has nothing else to offer to this country. But this time, the nation has fully realized that this is a fraud that was committed by Donald Trump. Yeah. They will not fall second time for it.
It is just extraordinary how silent many Republicans in Congress have been, how fearful they are of him. I mean, privately, they say one thing. Publicly, they say something else. You know, Lindsey Graham's in a, you know, worried he's going to get primaried. So he's, you know, completely reversed himself based on what he previously had said publicly about this president. And, you know, Ivanka Trump, who, you know, wants to move in social circles, polite social circles, and Jared Kushner, who portray themselves as, you know, these deep thinkers and stuff. The fact that they are all just standing there silently while this man just demagogues people of color or anybody who he views as different and calls them foreigners is just extraordinary to me. Mr. Khan, I appreciate you being with us. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Coming up next, we'll talk to one Democratic congresswoman, the co-chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, who's speaking out against the president's tweets. And later, the Republican, who also are, and the vast majority who are not speaking out. Plus, exclusive new details on Julian Assange's bizarre life in hiding inside the London embassy. Something to see, as you'll only see it here in these monitors from the embassy itself. We'll be right back. The four female lawmakers that President Trump targeted in his racist Twitter rant this weekend spoke out about his attack just a few hours ago. Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Ayanna Pressley, and Rashida Tlaib used direct and, as you'll see, stark language to rebut the president's attacks that were, again, not only racist, but falsely labeled them as non-Americans.
This is a president who has said, grab women by the pussy. This is a president who's called black athletes sons of bitches. This is a president who has called black people who come from black and brown countries shitholes. This is a president who has equated neo-Nazis with those who protest against them in Charlottesville. This is a president who has openly violated the very value our country aspires to uphold: equality under the law, religious liberty, equal protection, and protection from persecution. And to distract from that, he's launching a blatantly racist attack on four duly elected members of the United States of House of Representatives, all of whom are women of color. This is the agenda of white nationalists, whether it is happening in chat rooms or it's happening on national TV, and now it's reached the White House garden.
I am not surprised when the president says that four sitting members of Congress should, quote, go back to their own country, when he has authorized raids without warrants on thousands of families across this country. I am not surprised that he uses the rhetoric that he does when he violates international human rights and takes thousands of children away from their families. I am not surprised that he has turned our public education system under the leadership of Betsy DeVos into a cash cow to enrich himself and his friends. I am not surprised when he corrupts via the Secretary of Transportation. I am not surprised at what he's doing.
Well, joining me now is Democratic Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal, co-chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. Congresswoman Jayapal, thanks for being with us. You were not targeted directly by the president, but you're a naturalized citizen. You're a woman of color in Congress. You tweeted in support of your colleagues who were attacked by him. What do you make of how this continues to unfold?
Well, first of all, Anderson, I think all of us are attacked personally in some way because he said progressive Democrat congresswomen. It was clear he was talking about those four. But I will tell you, I got calls today from friends of mine who are naturalized citizens, Americans who have been in this country for many years, who said, I don't know what to tell my children. They see the president saying terrible things about their parents and therefore about them. And I think the impact of his words are deeply felt across the country, and they're also felt by people who remember their own connections to their immigrant histories. And so this is a racist, vile, xenophobic ploy to speak to, I think, a small part of his base. But this has been his playbook all along. Personalize, attack, and now he's even saying if you dissent, that somehow you should go back to your country if you criticize the country. I think dissent is patriotic. And I think I was, you know, listening to my friend Mr. Khan earlier. I mean, this is a man, a naturalized U.S. citizen, whose son gave his life for this country. And Donald Trump, in his tweet, is undermining everything that we hold dear in our Constitution and in our founding values.
You know, I mean, if you look at what he said, it frankly echoes what mobs of people said to Irish Catholics who came to this country, at the turn of the century, to people from China who came, who helped build this country and its railroads. To the generations of people who came from shtetls and from ghettos and from places all over the world. You know, time after time, they were told they weren't welcome here. Go back to where they came from. Even in this case, the four women, three of them come from, you know, the United States. The whole thing is it harkens back to a dark period in America's past.
Yes, it does. And let's be clear that, you know, we know that history very well. And I think actually people still remember it from their parents and their grandparents, even if it's removed. But also, this is not something that doesn't happen today. I mean, I represent the Seattle area, and I hate to tell you, but I've been told to go back to my country, particularly after 9/11, when I was defending the rights of Muslim Americans and Arab Americans who were being secretly detained and deported, particularly during that time. I was told all the time to go back to my country. I was, you know, got lynching threats and racist threats. But now it's coming from the White House. It is coming from the person who is the president of the United States. And I think that is so deeply terrifying and horrific. And I think what you said in your opening comments about this is Trump being Trump, and, you know, he almost wants us to not pay attention to it. But of course, we have to call this out. I will just say, I talked to a couple of my Republican friends because I couldn't sleep last night, you know, just thinking about all of this. And I thought about, I won't name them right now, but I thought about a few Republicans across the aisle who I couldn't believe hadn't spoken out. And I went on the floor just now and I found one of them and said, "Why have you not spoken out?" And he said to me, "You know, I even looked at my kids. We saw that. And we, my kids looked at me because we had just gone to the Trump Christmas party, or not Christmas party, but the Trump, whatever, 4th of July party. And they got their picture taken with him and they were looking at me like, 'Dad, is this okay?' And I said, 'Well, are you going to speak out?' Now he tells me he is going to speak out. But the fact that there has been deathly silence, now a couple of people, but then even from Lindsey Graham, this attempt to just brand everybody as socialist and, you know, these terrible people, without really recognizing, yes, he called the president to a higher ground, but he didn't say this was wrong. And we are going to put a resolution on the floor for a vote tomorrow condemning the president's racist tweets. And I certainly hope that Republicans will join us in the great tradition of Democratic and Republican presidents who know that this country would not be here but for the work of immigrants who came from all over the world."
Yeah, I mean, if memory serves, you know, Lindsey Graham had called the president, you know, had called Donald Trump bigoted and xenophobic, I think, a long time ago. Now, I mean, he's certainly no profile in courage these days,
right,
on this issue. Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal, I appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Anderson.
Still to come, why are so few Republicans willing to go on the record and criticize the president's tweets? We'll take a look at that next. We're talking tonight about the president's racist tweets, his defense of them, and the reaction from Democrats and Republicans alike. A small but substantial number of GOP lawmakers have condemned in varying degrees what the president said. Here's a sample.
"What was said and what was tweeted was destructive, was demeaning, was disunifying, and frankly was very wrong."
"You're an American citizen, and the United States is your home."
The tweets are racist and xenophobic. They're also inaccurate. It's behavior that's unbecoming of a president of the United States and a leader of the free world."
Well, Senator Lindsey Graham saying the president should aim higher, but attacking the congresswoman. Steve Daines, Congressman Jim Jordan, defending the president. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy saying, quote, "The president is not a racist." Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell declined to comment. Joining us now is former Trump campaign advisor Steve Cortez and Wajahat Ali, contributing op-ed writer for The New York Times. Both, thanks for being with us. Steve, I know you do not approve of the president's tweets. You tweeted yourself about that. You called them divisive. I want to read the definition of the word demagogue that I read at the top of the show from Webster's Dictionary. It's a leader who makes use of popular prejudices and false claims and promises in order to gain power. Is Donald Trump a demagogue? I mean, isn't this exactly what he is doing here?
No, I don't believe he's a demagogue. I did not appreciate the tweet, and I said so earlier this morning.
So he's not using people's prejudices in order to maintain, gain power?
No. Look, it was, again, I'm not defending the tweet. It was illogical. You know, Americans don't go back to anywhere. They're Americans. And it was divisive. And in a time that I don't think we need division. So I would like him, quite frankly, to retract it or at least to clarify it. But let me also point this out, if we're going to talk about demagoguery and divisiveness.
Well, actually, we're not talking about demagoguery because you haven't acknowledged this is demagoguery. So if you acknowledge this is demagoguery, I'm happy for you to talk about demagoguery of somebody else. How can you say this is not demagoguery? How can you say that this is not playing on people's prejudices about people of color, about going back to your homeland, when in fact—
Because he didn't mention color.
Well, he doesn't have to mention color. You're saying it's random that he picked four people of color.
When you disagree with people of color, that doesn't mean you disagree with them because of their color. Okay?
And you tell them to go back to where they were. If somebody disagrees, if you tell a person of color to go back to the land they conceded that he shouldn't.
I already conceded that that was wrong.
Why
to
was
say,
it wrong?
And he should, in my view, retract it and clarify because they're Americans. Because they're Americans.
Okay.
And that's illogical.
So by pretending they're not Americans, what is that?
All right, Anderson, did I get invited on to talk or did you want to do the talking?
Well, I'm trying to get you to actually give a straight answer. I mean, you're saying, go ahead.
Here's my straight answer. I did not appreciate what the president did. Okay. And I'm willing to say so as a clear supporter of his. All right. I'm trying to be very honest here and call balls and strikes. I also want to call out the demagoguery and prejudice of the left of Democratic politicians and their media allies in their insane overreaction to this tweet. And I will give you a very quote, an actual example from my colleague who I'm on with tonight, from Mr. Ali. He tweeted, "Trump is a racist. If you still support him, so are you."
Okay.
Now that to me.
Okay. So you called out
prejudice.
Okay,
so that is.
Okay. So you've taken a stand and called out demagoguery and prejudice on the left. You don't see any on the right. You don't see any from the president, but you see it on the left.
No.
Let's bring in Mr. Ali. Mr. Ali, what do you make of Steve's argument?
To call me and to call tens of millions of Trump supporters racist, okay, to dismiss us, to dehumanize us, and marginalize us.
We hear you.
That is bigotry. That is its own bigotry.
Right. You are calling the left demagogues and racist. You're not saying there's any Republican who is, certainly not the president. Mr. Ali, how do you respond?
I didn't say they're racist. I said they're bigots.
President
Trump
is a racist. And if you don't think he's a racist, then there's no such thing as a racist. President Trump has already said he's a nationalist. And I think it's pretty clear after today's tweets. And some would say
he is a nationalist. Let him go.
After many tweets, he's a white nationalist. And I would say he's a demagogue. He's a person who ran on the Obama birther conspiracy theory. For the 2018 midterms, Steve, you support a man who promoted a white supremacist conspiracy theory of Jewish money funding invaders, a caravan of immigrants, rapists, and criminals. And your father and my father, who are immigrants of color, your father came from Colombia, my father came from Pakistan, the white nationalist base of Trump that you support, allegedly, would see us as invaders. No. And right now, he just said, go back to your country to four women of color, which is factually incorrect because three of those women were born in this country, so he's stupid. And also, Ilhan Omar is a citizen, and they're all women of color. So if you're unwilling to acknowledge and call out racism, because apparently that's Voldemort, because apparently calling out racism for being racism makes you a racist in this warped new mindset of Republicans, then you are complicit in supporting and endorsing Donald Trump's racist agenda.
When you dismiss tens of millions of Trump voters, and when you say that we are all racists, that we are deplorables, that we're retrogrades, what you're doing is you're dehumanizing us. And you're saying that because I don't agree with your political opinion, you are no longer legitimate in our eyes.
But
and
Steve,
that is its own bigotry. And if you can't realize that, then you're just not open to it. Then you're so prejudiced by your hatred of Trump that you can't see that you are acting in an extremely prejudiced manner to dismiss us as a bunch of racists.
So
I'm not a racist, but you tweeted that I am.
Okay, let Steve
respond.
I'm sorry, let Wajahat respond.
So the people who call out racism are racist. And when Donald Trump says racist things, it's our fault because we call out the racism and hate. Okay, number one. Number two, I retweeted an article written by another individual for the Daily Beast. But I stand by what I say, that if you support Donald Trump's agenda right now in 2019, after everything that he's done, you might not be a racist, Steve. Let me say this. You might not be a racist, but you are fine with endorsing and supporting a racist president. And you have to look yourself in the mirror right now in 2019 America and ask yourself, is it worth it? Why am I supporting a racist president? What type of country am I creating?
I'm saying that's demagoguery. And by the way, if we want to talk about real racism in this country, I'm sitting right now in Chicago. There were 41 people shot in this city this weekend in a city that is completely controlled by blue state Democrats.
Last thing. Okay.
That
Steve,
to me
they'll never
is
love
real
you.
Racism.
Is the a white nationalist will never love you. No matter how hard you try to be the Latin face of Trump, they will never love you.
No, stop saying that I don't love white nationalists. American nationalism.
This
is you being bigoted. You're being bigoted toward me. And to talk to me in that condescending manner,
the only bigotry, Steve, in your opinion, is on the left.
That I somehow want their love, that I'm not a thinking independent brown citizen of the United States.
Be best.
discussion will continue. Thank you. Coming up, a CNN exclusive, documents that show just how Julian Assange orchestrated the WikiLeaks release of those explosive emails from the DNC and the Clinton campaign in the run-up to the 2016 election, all while he was holed up in the Ecuadorian embassy. Well, it was the document dump that very well could have changed the course of American presidential history. In the run-up to the 2016 election, WikiLeaks spent days upon days releasing hacked emails from the members of the Democratic National Committee and the Clinton campaign that contained plenty of embarrassing details and drew worldwide attention. Now, during that time, WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange was holed up in the Ecuadorian embassy in London and since then has consistently denied any connection at all with Russia in the WikiLeaks disclosures. Well, now, in an exclusive investigation, CNN has uncovered a raft of documents outlining in pretty remarkable detail Assange's time in the embassy and how he met with hackers and Russians tied to the Kremlin. Here's Alex Marquardt with our report.
In the months leading up to the 2016 presidential election, Ecuador's embassy in London turned into a command post for WikiLeaks. At its helm, the website's founder, Julian Assange, who was living there in political asylum. In stunning new detail, hundreds of security reports, videos, and photos obtained exclusively by CNN and verified by an Ecuadorian intelligence official describe how Assange released stolen Democratic emails directly from the embassy and who he met with, world-class hackers and Russians tied to the Kremlin. The explosive material, when lined up with the timeline in the Mueller report, paints a striking picture of how Assange orchestrated the game-changing document dumps from just a few rooms in the embassy. The exclusively obtained surveillance reports show that the WikiLeaks founder, who had been given asylum in 2012,
inside this embassy,
wielded enormous power in the building, rivaling even the ambassadors, with whom he would regularly clash. As these exclusive security photos show, he even got physical with the embassy guards. The documents describe how Assange demanded and got high-speed internet, phones, even a special guest list that allowed certain visitors to not show identification or be searched. Even as it hosted him, Ecuador hired three different security companies to carry out surveillance of Assange, including Spain-based UC Global, which compiled the reports obtained by CNN. The never-before-seen cache of documents says Assange installed his own recording devices and used sound machines so he couldn't be listened to, all of which may have played a role in his election interference. Assange has denied working for the Kremlin or receiving the stolen emails from Russia. WikiLeaks did not respond to multiple requests for comment.
He is temperamentally unfit to hold an office.
It was June of 2016. Trump and Hillary Clinton were the de facto nominees. It was looking like it was going to be a bitter election.
Hillary Clinton has perfected the politics of personal profit and even theft.
That month, according to the Mueller report, WikiLeaks communicated secretly with unidentified online personas who turned out to be Russian hackers. Meanwhile, the number of visits paid to Assange at the embassy dramatically picked up. The reports exclusively obtained by CNN show one frequent visitor was this man, Andrew Mueller Magoon, a hacker whom the special counsel wrote may have assisted with the transfer of these stolen documents to WikiLeaks.
If you look at the internet from a perspective of people in power,
Mueller Magoon had appeared on Assange's short-lived show on RT, the Russian TV network that gets its marching orders from the Kremlin. The security logs show that RT's London bureau chief, Nikolai Bogachikin, also visited that month twice. And during one visit that lasted only 5 minutes, he gave Assange a USB drive. Bogachikin defended his visits to Assange, telling CNN RT has produced multiple programming featuring Mr. Assange. Within that process, everything that is intrinsically involved in the production of content took place. Mueller Magoon declined to comment to CNN, but told the Washington Post he never had the hacked materials before they were released. But U.S. intelligence agencies have concluded RT actively collaborated with WikiLeaks, playing a significant role in Russia's efforts to help Trump win, which RT denies.
Russian hackers have breached the computer network of the Democratic National Committee.
On June 14, 2016, the Democratic National Committee announced it had been hacked, and accused Russia of being responsible. Trump dismissed allegations of Russian involvement, instead suggesting the DNC hacked itself. 5 days later, according to the exclusive documents, Assange got new equipment for data transmission. The embassy's security attaché even helped install it. On July 6th, WikiLeaks reached out to the Russian hackers, who used the names Guccifer 2.0 and DC Leaks. Those are covers, the Mueller report says, for Russian military intelligence. The Democratic National Convention is approaching, WikiLeaks warned the Russians, and Clinton will solidify Bernie Sanders supporters behind her. 8 days later, the group received encrypted files, according to the Mueller report, with the name Big Archive. That same day, Assange met again for more than 4 hours with Mueller Magoon, one of at least a dozen times they met at the embassy before the election, according to the security reports. On the day the Republican National Convention kicks off, the security photos show a man in a mask and sunglasses arriving at the embassy. A guard left his post and collected a package. The documents suggest this was an arranged meeting. It's unclear whether that was related to a message sent the same day, July 18th, when WikiLeaks told the Russian hackers, according to the Mueller report, that they received the files and would release them this week.
Hell no, DNC! We won't vote for Hillary!
4 days later, WikiLeaks released a trove of stolen files, and all hell breaks loose. More than 20,000 emails from the DNC showing the preference of top officials for Clinton over Bernie Sanders. When the Democratic Convention opened, it was consumed by chaos.
Everybody settle down, please.
The DNC chair had to step down, and Trump pounced.
Russia, if you're listening, I hope you're able to find the 30,000 emails that are missing.
As the election entered its final weeks, Russia, according to Mueller, wrote WikiLeaks offering more files. You won't be disappointed, the hackers wrote. After receiving several files from the Russian hackers in the immediate days prior, WikiLeaks started posting 50,000 emails stolen from Clinton's campaign chairman, John Podesta, revealing infighting and bickering.
If this was about transparency, they put them all out. So they're dribbling them out.
Mueller's team suspects that transfer took place on September 19th, the same day Assange met again with hacker Andrew Mueller Magoon, according to the security reports. In the last month before the election, WikiLeaks released batch after batch of Podesta's emails.
This just came out. WikiLeaks! I love WikiLeaks!
Transcripts of Clinton's paid speeches to Wall Street, staffers criticizing her terrible instincts.
WikiLeaks. This WikiLeaks is unbelievable.
The U.S. government decided to get involved, according to a U.S. official and documents obtained by CNN, warning Ecuador, stop Assange or there will be consequences. Just 3 weeks before the election, Ecuador cut Assange off. No more phones, internet, or guests. Shortly after, the embassy relented on guest restrictions. And at 1 a.m. on October 19th, the security materials obtained by CNN show two WikiLeaks staffers showed up and took away about 100 hard drives. Security guards wanted to examine the hard drives, but they couldn't. The WikiLeaks personnel were on that special list of people not to be searched. One of the Ecuadorian ambassadors who worked at the embassy during Assange's stay told CNN he was never pressured by his government to give Assange special treatment. But this past April, Assange's world came crashing down. The asylum, his lifeblood, was taken away by Ecuador's new president, citing his participation in U.S. election meddling. British police carried him out of the embassy. And the U.S. Justice Department unsealed secret charges, but not for anything related to the election. Instead, it was for soliciting and publishing classified Pentagon materials in 2010. Assange maintains his innocence. And right on cue, Russia came to Assange's defense. Top officials accusing the U.S. of violating his rights, saying the hand of democracy squeezes the throat of freedom.
Well, that was Alex Marquardt reporting. Fascinating. Just ahead, yet another move by the Trump administration to further limit the ability of migrants to claim asylum in the U.S. Let's turn into quite a night for news and the healthy debate of it. And there's more where that came from, no doubt. Let's check in with Chris, see what he's going to do for Cuomo Primetime. Chris?
Let's get after it. We'll be in full effect tonight, Anderson. We have the acting head of CBP. Important conversations to have about the ICE raids, the philosophy about it, and the new asylum rule that the administration's coming up with. Look, the politics behind it are the same as what he said in the tweet to the lawmakers. All right. The president sees advantage in playing on fears and prejudices. And that's what this policy is about as well.
Mm. Chris, we'll be watching. It's about 4 minutes from now. I'll see you then. Just ahead, the Trump administration's latest moves to drastically limit the number of migrants that Chris was talking about who are seeking asylum in the U.S. One quick item before we go tonight, and almost seems fitting. The Trump administration today moved to dramatically limit the ability of Central American migrants to claim asylum, enacting a new rule barring those traveling through any third country from being able to claim refuge. Since most people fleeing the Northern Triangle countries of Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador come through Mexico, this effectively closes the door to all of them. Again, this is for asylum. There are some exceptions, such as for those who have been trafficked, but it is still a major, major cutback, but one that is all but certain to face legal challenges ahead. And I know Chris is going to have more on that in just a few seconds, so let's go over to him. The news continues. I want to hand it over to Chris for Cuomo Prime Time. Chris?
Now streaming exclusively on Max. A new CNN flash doc about the album that has Nashville talking, Call Me Country, Beyonce and Nashville's Renaissance. Watch it at max.com/callmecountry. Max subscription required.